content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Frank Urban from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day. And our veteran today is someone I know very well. He's my brother, Paul. Welcome to Salute a Veteran.
Well, thank you.
Paul was in the Navy. He's my eldest brother, and all of my brothers except one are veterans. And sometimes veterans don't know they're veterans. If you served a day where you've signed your name on a sheet of paper to give everything up to, including your life, you're a veteran. So, Paul, I think you fell under that category for a while.
Absolutely.
Anyway, we just want to talk a little bit about how you came in the Navy. You were brought up in Fayetteville. You were born in Pittsburgh. You were brought up in Fayetteville. That's right. Where I was born. So go ahead. Tell us a little bit about how you started.
Graduated high school in 1952. Mm-hmm. And I chose to join the Navy before I got drafted. I didn't want to get drafted into the Army because I had worked for the Army as a student in high school. We kind of made fun of a lot of the Army guys because they'd come to town and date our women.
So anyway,
I worked for the Army in high school in this junior and senior year. I drove a 6x at Fort Bragg every summer for 2 years with a PX on the back of it, where we carried
post-exchange
materials, everything from beer to shoelaces and crackers. I could never imagine how we got everything on there, the different things that we had on there.
Mm-hmm.
But they would bring in troops in the summertime for maneuvers.
Uh-huh.
And so anyway, I worked and I kind of enjoyed that, and I made a few bucks doing that.
How much did they pay you?
I have no idea. I couldn't tell you. But anyway, so I decided to join the Navy, and we went to the recruiting station in Raleigh, which is 50 miles away, and myself and another fella. And they said, do you want to leave today and go to Michigan? I forget, a naval station in one of the northern states, or do you want to leave tomorrow and go to San Diego? I said, let's leave tomorrow and go to San Diego. So that's what we did. We waited a day, and they put us on a train to San Diego. It was in the end of June or beginning of July in 52.
So you're 19 years old. They put you on a train to San Diego. I mean, that alone was an adventure.
Yeah, that was very nice. Enjoyed that a lot because I think we had a sleeper. In fact, I know we did.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get to San Diego and go through boot camp. And
what was that like?
Well, it was nice. Kind of enjoyed it. When we first got there, as a young, person just coming in, they had the other recruits that were, I would say, juniors or seniors at boot camp. They had been there a while.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold candy bars. You couldn't go to the exchange to buy anything for your first.
Did you say Gee-dunk?
Yeah, it seems like that's what they call it.
I've heard Marines say that.
So
that's
anyway,
the term for junk food. Right?
So they would charge at that time. They would charge a quarter for a 5-cent candy bar.
Oh my God!
Or whatever for a big one. And they would. So when we got to that point, we did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Only we did it in bigger amounts. we'd go to the PX and buy not a handful, we'd buy a whole box of something.
Mm-hmm.
Usually a friend of mine and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd bring it back and hide it in buckets and hide it under the barracks. And so we did pretty well.
Make a few extra bucks.
Get a few extra bucks.
And then after
we're all through boot camp,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to take a bus ride back home to Fayetteville, and the guy that I went in with, and I won't give his name, but he was a good fella, but he was kind of prejudiced on people,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't like black people. And I've never been prejudiced on anybody, so it's always, you know, a mystery kind of to me. And we get on the bus. Oh, while we're in boot camp, his bunkmate was a guy named George, black fella from Georgia. They became bunkmates. I forget which one had the top, which one had the bottom. And anyway, George is on the same bus. He became very good friends. Mm-hmm. I'll call the guy Bob. It wasn't his name, but anyway. Bob and George became extremely good friends, and they sat together on the bus. We were on either Greyhound or Trailways out of San Diego, and we're on the bus, and George and Bob are sitting together, and the bus stops when we get to Texas. And the bus stops, and the driver comes back, and came to our seat. I was sitting across the aisle, and George and Bob were sitting on the other side. And told Bob he's going to have to go to the back of the bus. And Bob spoke up and says, hey, what do you mean he's got to go to the back of the bus? Well, if he's going to the back of the bus, then I'm going to the back of the bus. And then you're going. So all three of us went to the back of the bus.
In solidarity.
And rode that out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of an experience, you know.
Made a big
I have no war stories, none. I was very fortunate. I didn't have to serve overseas. This was going home on leave after boot camp. Mm-hmm. So coming back, got back to the base, and we got assigned. And Bob, my friend, was assigned to a repair ship somewhere out in the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And I was assigned to Mare Island. And I thought, well, I don't know where Mare Island is, but I knew it was going to be out in the water somewhere. And I found out that Mare Island was across a bridge from Vallejo, California, which was up north. So they gave me money to travel by train or bus to Vallejo, and I stuck that in my pocket and decided to hitchhike. And I caught a ride by a fellow that picked me up.
Were you in uniform?
I was in uniform. Got talking, and he said, where are you going? And I said, I'm going to Vallejo. And he paused, and he said, I'll tell you, here in California, it's called Vallejo. We pronounce the J's as H's. It's called Vallejo. And I said, okay. And a little while later, he said, when did you get here? And I said, oh, about hoon or who lie. So anyway, we had a good talk on that.
Hoon or who lie?
Yeah.
I've heard you tell that story before, but it's still funny every time.
Yeah, it's something that kind of sticks out in my mind. But anyway, I was assigned. I had a good duty.
Mm-hmm.
I was a seaman.
Mm-hmm.
And I was assigned to special services on the Mare Island. Mare Island had been a sub base during the Second War. And anyway, had nice barracks. It was the old wave barracks. They were very nice. And, but my job was, I was a personnelman and assigned to a lieutenant that was over special services.
Mm-hmm.
And my job, among many others, was to keep track of all the athletic goings-on at the base and to contribute to the ships that would come in for repair and help the crews to get involved if they wanted to in different sporting events, or we got them basketball tickets and I'd get baseball tickets. I had to go to San Francisco twice a month and pick up. I had a naval station wagon assigned to go to San Francisco to pick up tickets to theater, to the opera, to movies, to concerts, to whatever.
And these would be donated Navy.
For the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
Had a good job. I had a racket while the others were out fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very fortunate. And so
now a lot of the people that were coming in, were they coming from the war?
They were coming in from the Western waters, you know.
And when we say the war was...
the war was on, yeah.
This was the Korean War,
right.
So this was going on. Okay.
Yeah.
The Forgotten War.
So again, I was very fortunate. I had a few buddies that were not as fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
A few, I had two, which was enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed it a lot, and I got a lot of, like I say, I got a lot of entertaining benefits from it.
Did you get to accompany them, or how did
Well, no, though you passed them out, and I'll tell it now. I didn't tell it then, but my number of my friends had good seats at whatever, a game or a opera. Got to go to different concerts. I went to, as I remember, one of the ones that I remember well was at the Cal Palace in San Francisco, where I met Sammy Davis Jr. And his father and his uncles. He's called the Sammy Davis Trio, I think. And so I got to meet him, and I met Bob Hope briefly. Yeah, in different venues, different movies. Like I say, I had a real racket. Very thankful for it. So that's my, I guess, one of the big things that happened to me on the way before, I'm trying to think, not before, that in September, after graduation from boot camp and before we got to go home, or just, I guess, after we got to go home and came back and got assigned, we didn't leave right away, I went to Hollywood. And I always wanted to go to Hollywood, went to Los Angeles. And that was in September of 1952. And I went to a place called the, it was a theater where Adlai Stevenson, who was running for president against Eisenhower. I was in the concourse of the theater. It was in the morning. And I was spending the day there. And I was looking at all the pictures of all the people that were going to be there, the different stars that were going to be there. Somebody come up to me, as in my suit, sailor suit, somebody come up to me and, here, sailor, here's a couple of tickets to go to this tonight. And I thanked them, and I had these tickets to where I was invited to go to this rally for Adlai Stevenson. So tried to find a date. I never did, but I went by myself. Got in there and was really, really surprised because I met all kind of stars and Ava Gardner,
North Carolina,
Tony Curtis's wife, Jeff, trying to think of his last name who played it. Anyway, Barry Sullivan, whole lot of different people and a lot of starlets and,
52
dance orchestra with, just a very nice affair.
Who would have been popular there, big band-wise? Les Brown? Les Brown, okay.
Les Brown and his band, right. I was a big dancer, liked to dance, and had fun, and danced with Elizabeth Taylor double. Not her.
Seriously?
They had a lot of starlets there, and they had, I'm trying to think of the, it was Ava Gardner, and Tony Curtis's wife, and another girl who's a dancer, very well known. And I'll come back to them. But anyway, go out in the foyer with these big round posts, leaning up against the post having a cigarette. And Tony Curtis came over and said, "What's the matter, sailor? Are you not having a good time?" I said, "I'm having a great time." Got talking to him. Where am I from? Where's he from? Blah, 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 blah. Anyway. Get talking in the, we could hear from the inside in the ballroom, they made an announcement that they were opening up the kissing booth. So Tony Curtis grabbed my arm and we're standing in the doorway way back in this big hall. And he lifts up my arm. They were looking for somebody to start off this kissing booth thing. I said, no.
Too late.
So anyway, he says, "Come on." He takes me up. So I got to kiss these three women. Do I remember it? Yes and no. I don't remember enough of it. That I just, you know, just. But it was really neat. And
this was still at the Adlai Stevenson.
This
event?
Was the Adlai Stevenson World, and it was at the theater. Begin with a P. Palladium. The Palladium Theater in Hollywood.
And you were in uniform.
And I was in uniform.
Which now you wouldn't be allowed to do.
Which
maybe you messed it up.
Why wouldn't I?
You can't wear a uniform to a military uniform to a political event.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, Anyway, it was really nice. So, and then it was from there when I went up to Vallejo and got my racket job. And so I got out of the service. While I was in there, I was on the boxing team and used to work out pretty regularly. And I was also a smoker. Anyway, I didn't fare too well as a boxer. I was 1 for 3 in 3 fights. 2 of them were pretty big fights, and one wasn't. One was on my side. So.
Was this in the Navy?
Yeah,
in the Navy. Not on the outside.
So that's it. I had a racket.
Now, for our younger listeners, a racket is just like a good deal.
And then I came down with a problem. And I was telling a corpsman about it. Well, I'll tell. I was telling him about my stools being black.
You don't have to go into too much detail.
Well, no, that's it.
I'm kidding.
And he said, my God, he said, how do you feel? I said, I feel fine. I said, why are they? He said, you need to go to the dispensary and get that checked out. Well, he saw me like a day or two later, and he said, did you go to? I said, no. And he said, well, get down there now. So it kind of scared me. So I go there, and I had to stay there until I produced a specimen. Long story short, they put me in the hospital in the ulcer ward. And I stayed in bed for 3 days, having nothing but half and half, half milk, half cream, and some pills called, I don't know, some kind of pills. And then after 3 days, I was able to get up and move around. And I had no pain, nothing, and I thought it was a joke. And my doctor was the commander of the hospital, and they wanted to operate. And for whatever, I didn't want to get the operation. I didn't hurt or anything, and I saw all these other people in there. And I learned some of them had lost all their stomach, had half of the stomach, have goat skin stomachs and so forth. So I opted not to, and he said, well, you know, you better be an I don't give a damn guy. You better take care of yourself, you know. There were some problems, slight problems at home that concerned me and A-type personality. And so anyway, long story short, after about, they put you on a 3-day diet after the pills and the milk. Put you on a 3-day diet. I could have either egg, mashed potatoes, or noodles. Well, I liked eggs, so I had eggs morning, noon, and supper every day for 3 days. And they take these x-rays again or whatever they do, and they said, you got to do it again. So I did it again. So for another 30 days, I was on that egg diet because I liked eggs. And then I got to eat in a special diet where everything was either broiled, baked, and so that was good food. I had these big cans of milk in the hospital. So anyway, after about 6 months, they said, would you like to, you know, get out? And I thought, no, I'll go ahead, stay a while, you know. So anyway, after 7 months, I went on and said, yes. So I got out on a medical. And then I went to Washington, D.C.
Directly from?
Yeah, I didn't want to.
California?
Well, I might have went home for a while. And I didn't want to live in North Carolina.
Well, I'd like to hear about when you came home, because I would have been a little kid.
Yeah, you were.
And probably.
Yeah.
That would be my first memory of you.
You would have been 8.
No, not that.
No, wait a minute.
You was 7 months. So what year was it when you got out?
54.
54. So I would have been 4 or 5.
Okay, yeah. Okay, that's right. I kind of remember. And I remember I came home on a bus that time. And I never slept one wink on the bus. I never slept. And I got back and my eyes.
Same bus all the way across the country?
I think so.
Wow.
And had a picture taken with Mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember I had that picture with a nice blue coat on, and my eyes are all black, and I'm, you know, not sleeping and everything. Anyway, I don't remember how much time I spent there, but then I went to Washington, D.C., and got a job there. That's me. So, anyway. So when I got back home, stayed there a while, I forget how long, and then I decided to go to D.C. I liked that. I didn't want to go back to North Carolina. I didn't want to stay in North Carolina. And I didn't want to go back to Pittsburgh, so I went to D.C. and got a job there in D.C. and with the Unemployment Compensation Board, kept that for 90 days. And then I got into the business of phonograph records. The two young fellas that started selling used jukebox records, which were the 78s, the bigger records, just the old 78 records. They were selling used records out of their basement.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got into buying the current real records then at the time. And they started a business of distribution into grocery stores and drug stores and so forth. And after they were about 6 months old, I was knew them a bit, and I went to work with them. And we really started business big time.
Mm-hmm.
One of the fellas' father was friends with the giant food people in that area. They were like the big Walmart stores today. And I guess they're still in business, Giant Foods. And they were a big account. It was a big account. And then we started getting into the military up in that area. As best I remember, it was Fort Meade and some of the other smaller Army bases there, and the Air Force Base, Bowling Field. And then we were able to get into the naval station at in Norfolk, Virginia. Huge business in the post-exchange system.
So all of these, you're selling records.
Selling records. Mm-hmm. And they had record racks in there. And we were growing pretty fast. And they wanted me to come to North Carolina because they saw I had been from North Carolina, and they wanted me to come and pick up Fort Bragg, Camp Lejeune, Cherry Point, and all these places down in this area where I live now, Raleigh, North Carolina. So I came to Raleigh. I didn't want to go to Fayetteville. And very long story short, we became very prominent in the post-exchange system worldwide, even to some of the, to the extent of some of the larger ships at sea, like aircraft carriers or whatever. Post-exchange system.
What was the name of the company?
Transcontinental Music Corporation.
Okay.
And
we were record distributors.
We were record distributors, we were right.
PX.
And then we were also into civilian different stores, drug stores. I think we were in Kaufman's and Gimbel's. And we grew pretty fast, really did. And so
now I remember now at this time, not to put it on, not to turn it on me, but I remember you sending records home to us.
Right.
Often before they were released.
Well, we were so big, we got a lot of records, and I was privy to get samples, quite a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my younger brothers and sisters, your older brothers and sisters, I send in them records that I think made them very popular at school.
One record for that you dance. Sent was a 45 of Elvis Presley in his Army uniform, if I'm not mistaken. And it was it had a picture on like an album, but it was just a 45 in, right. in a small album cover.
Yeah.
And I would stare at that and try to fix my hair like Elvis's. And Charles Johnson next door took me over to his house and tried to make my hair look like Elvis's. The memories we have.
But anyway, I really liked the Raleigh area a lot. And so when promotions came, rather than move to the new areas, I commuted. The first place was from Raleigh to Baltimore. It's 308 miles. Leave every Monday morning at 4 a.m. I'd get up at 3. My wife would cook bacon and eggs when I used to eat bacon and eggs in the morning. And I'd leave at 4 a.m. every Monday morning and then leave at 5, 5:30, 6 o'clock on Friday evening to come back home for 3.5 years. And so rather than I couldn't fly, I couldn't get in there in time to be there on time back in those days, 62, or no, 65. I guess it was about 65.
Yeah.
And then the next promotion was Atlanta, which was 408 miles, and I drove that one time. The rest of the time I flew. And I spent 3 years there. And so, again, all those years, I was privy to tickets to different shows. In fact, I could have gone to Hawaii, but I turned it down to watch Elvis's show there that they did. They made a record of it. He did a big show there. I can't remember what.
Yeah, he made several movies there.
That's what I'm saying. This was a big thing where he had this big, as I recall, I think it was a double record album. But I didn't go to that, but different things here on the East Coast. I was able to go to Tony Bennett, Fats Domino.
Let me back up a minute. After you finished with the Navy, got medically discharged, you took the bus across to home in Fayetteville. What took you to D.C.?
The fact that our grandparents had lived there and I had visited there as a kid.
Okay.
I liked it.
Did you stay with them at all?
When we were younger, we stayed with them.
Yeah. Now, see, I never really knew them.
So no,
this is,
you didn't know
this
them.
This is interesting to me.
But I liked Washington. That's basically what brought me there.
Well, Paul, thank you for being on Salute a Veteran Every Day. And I'm going to stand up and salute you. Don't feel guilty about having such a cushy job. Everybody that serves, their name is on the line. And that's going to wrap up this edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Address any comments or questions to us at 919-832-5138. I'm Frank Urban, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. See you next time.